Thanks very much for the invitation. It's really good to be back here, although for a really short time. So the title of this talk is Warp Conformal Field Theory, and it's based on the work done together with Tom Hartmann and Diego Hoffman that appeared last October. So the general context and motivation of this talk is the black hole entropy problem that we all know. So we know that black holes are behave like thermal objects. So they have a temperature, they have an entropy, they satisfy the first law, the laws of black hole mechanics. And so in particular, the entropy in appropriate units is just given by 1/4 of the area of the event horizon. And so, of course, one natural and pressing question we want to answer is, what are the microstates responsible for that entropy? Okay, so actually ADS-CFT has allowed significant progress on this front, starting with the work of Strominger and Vaffa, who reproduced the entropy of certain classes of five-dimensional BPS black holes just by counting states in string theory. So let's try string theory. 5D BPS black holes. So soon after the result, actually, it was realized that as far as the entropy counting was concerned, we didn't really need all UV details of string theory to do this counting. And basically, so this result, so the Strominger-Vaffa computation, has been generalized to more general classes of black holes, in particular some classes of higher dimensional black holes with an ADS-3 factor in the near horizon geometry, and also a class of lower dimensional black holes, 2+1 dimensional black holes, called BTZ black holes. And these black holes are asymptotically ADS-3. So basically, this entropy counting now relied on a result of Brown and Hainaut that the asymptotic symmetries of ADS-3, ASG is for asymptotic symmetry group, consists in 2 copies of Virasoro algebra. So actually, these symmetries act on the classical phase space of the theory. So we expect that upon quantization, gravity and ADS-3 will be dual, or will be given by a two-dimensional conformal field theory whose symmetries are precisely 2 copies of Virasoro algebra. And then, in turn, we can use the Cardy formula. Cardy formula, which counts the asymptotic growth of states in a 2D CFT, and compare this Cardy for this Cardy entropy to the black hole entropy, and there is a match. Okay, so this actually suggests some universal relation between black holes having an ADS-3 factor, involving an ADS-3 factor, and two-dimensional conformal field theories. So of course the problem is that, unlike the original Strominger-Vaffa computation, where we have a good grasp on what the two-dimensional conformal field theory actually is, in most cases we don't really know. We only know some generic features of the conformal field theory, such as central charges, presence of a gap, etc. But we don't really know what the details of this field theory are. Okay, so this is the situation for black holes involving an ADS-3 factor. So the question we can ask, what about other black holes? More generic black holes. Because we know, for example, the black holes that surround us, I don't know, Schwarzschild black hole, Kerr black hole, don't involve an ADS-3. I see that nebula disappears. So they don't involve an ADS-3 factor. So what can we tell about them? So a simple prototype and a first step towards studying these more generic black holes consists in studying extremal black holes. Such as, for example, the 4D extreme Kerr black hole. So these black holes, and actually, generically extremal black holes have the same near horizon geometry. So these black holes have a geometry close to the horizon that looks like this. Some function here, some stuff. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So these geometries, so here, so theta is a polar angle, phi is azimuthal angle, t and r are just some rescaled near horizon coordinates. And so this geometry is called the neck geometry. And this geometry is a central ingredient of the Kerr CFT correspondence. And the Kerr CFT conjectures a holographic duality between extremal 4D Kerr black holes. Okay, it has been generalized later, but the original form, 4D extremal Kerr, is dual to a 2D CFT. So that's the original conjecture. So now, if we look a little bit closer at this metric, and look at this metric at fixed polar angle, so put this a constant, and just focus on the constant theta part of this metric. So this metric looks pretty much like ADS3. So just written in fiber coordinate, the same way you can write S3 as an S2 fibration, as an S1 fibration over S2. So this is ADS2 and is an R fiber. So the only thing is that when lambda is equal to 1, this metric is just ADS3. But generically, when lambda is different from 1, this metric is different from ADS3. And it differs from ADS3 in a drastic way. In particular, the asymptotic behavior is really different from ADS3. So this metric for lambda, for generic lambda, is called the warped ADS3 space. Okay, so now the question we can ask, okay, so we sort of know the importance of the ADS3 factor in all the descriptions where a 2D CFT is underlying. So here the question we can ask, okay, here generically we don't have a warped ADS3 factor. So is it reasonable to expect that we should have a 2D conformal filtery dual in the first place? So that's the question I want to ask. Right, and after all, actually we know, or at least we believe, that ADS CFT is just one occurrence of some broader phenomenon, which is the great gauge gravity duality, and we are used to encounter situations where the backgrounds involved are not ADS, and the filtery duals are just not usual relativistic conformal filteries. So here I want to use these warped ADS3 spaces as a toy model for generically non-ADS holography or for finding a dual to extremal black holes in the same way, and hoping that warped ADS3 could play the same role than ADS3, than the role that ADS3 played for ADS CFT in covering the properties of ADS CFT. Let me first start by stressing by comparing ADS3 and warped ADS3 and stressing the difference and the similarities. So, okay. So let's start with the isometry. So the isometries of ADS3 are just SL2R plus SL2R. So the asymptotic symmetry group just extends these two, these six global isometries. So this is L0, L plus minus 1, L0 bar plus minus 1. Asymptotic symmetries extend these six global Killing vectors into two copies of a Virasoro algebra. So the algebra is usual. Usual thing. And same for LN bar. So we can take quotients of ADS3 and quotients of ADS, some particular quotients of ADS3 spaces give the BTZ black holes. And so the entropy of these BTZ black holes, the Bekenstein-Hawking of the BTZ black hole, matches with the entropy that we can compute from the CFT on the CFT side, which is the Cardy formula, which is just let's see, L0. Okay, so that's what we have on ADS3. This is all really well known. So what about the warped ADS3 side? So the global isometries of warped ADS3 are a little bit smaller. So because we have squashed the fiber here, we have just broken one side, one SL2R factor down to U1. So the isometries are just SL2R plus U1 with generators L0 plus minus 1 and U1 generator echo P0. So they were first studied 3 or 4 years ago by a group at Harvard because of their analogy with the BTZ black hole. So there is also a story where you can take quotients of warped ADS3 spaces and build three-dimensional black holes that are called, let's call them the warped black holes. So originally, warped ADS-3 spaces were conjectured to be dual to a two-dimensional conformal field theory. And one of the reason why, one of the reasons is that the black hole, the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the warped black hole could be written as a Cardy formula written in the canonical form, where TL and TR are some temperature that encode the charges of the black hole, and CL and CR are parameters that only appear in the Lagrangian, basically. But so this was more it was more numerology, basically, you can say. So these black holes were there, they have an entropy, we can write them in Cardy form. Does it mean that there is an underlying 2D CFT? Of course it doesn't mean. It might indicate that is the case, but it's certainly not a proof. And then, on the other hand, later, we computed the asymptotic symmetry group of these spaces. And of course, you would have expected, if a 2D CFT dual was what would have been present, you would have expected to find two copies of a Virasoro algebra, as in the usual case. But this is not the case. The asymptotic symmetry algebra that you find is actually a semi-direct product of a Virasoro algebra. That's the usual thing. And a U1 current algebra. Okay, so the thing, no, in terms of these charges, in terms of these global charges, you can just rewrite this entropy in terms of quantities that have a clear bulk interpretation. And the formula that you get for the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy for these black holes looks something like this. So C and K are central extensions that you compute the same way you can compute the Brownian central extensions. And P0 and L0 are just the black hole charges. So now the question I want to address today, if we didn't know about conformal field theory and we just start from a dot theory that has these black hole solutions and we just start with the data of the asymptotic symmetry group, we would be tempted to say, okay, we have these black holes, we have these spaces, maybe there is a dual theory, but what would be the symmetries of these dual theories? Of these dual theories, they would be just the semi-direct product of a Virasoro algebra and a U1 hat algebra. So the question I want to ask, is it possible, assuming that there is a field theory dual with these symmetries, what can we say about the entropy of this theory, and does it match the entropy of the black holes? That's the question I want to ask.
So just make sure, when you write S black hole as 2pi 3k, the top yes. expression, this was again numerology.
No, this is this is just what, so you have bulk quantities, you have P0 and L0, which is basically the mass and angular momentum. Mm-hmm. You have C and K that you compute from the asymptotic symmetry group. And then, I mean, this is what the entropy looks like in terms of these clear bulk quantities.
Right, just a bulk computation.
It's just a bulk computation. I'm not forcing it to look like a Cardy formula or anything.
In those charges, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm... Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not forcing it to look like anything like a Cardy formula, if you want. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Okay, any questions so far? Is the strategy clear?
Question.
Yes.
Do you know field theories? The simple, like, the Lagrangian description?
No. Okay. There's no. So, you could imagine deformations of usual field theories, like you can take just a free scalar and deform it by something like d2x, d bar x, something like this. But the problem is that this is an irrelevant deformation, so you don't really know. You don't really know what you're doing. So So that's the thing. I don't think there is any known Lagrangian description. There might be one coming soon. There is a paper by Wei Andy and Geoffrey is going to appear. So they might have something that looks like this, but there is none. On the other hand. Okay, on the other hand, I'm not really worried about this. So you might be worried saying, okay, well, does this even exist? I don't know if it exists. There's no example. But on the other hand, the usual way we deal with black hole entropy and ADS CFT is that we deal with things we know how to do, on at least in a little bit in both sides. So we deal with black holes that have an ADS refactor. We deal with conformal field theories. We're really used to conformal field theories. We're really used to black holes and an ADS refactor. They are supersymmetric, and that's nice. So here we are doing something that's a bit more complicated. We are trying to deal with a background that I mean, there's no, we don't do any concession. That's the thing we want to study. And then comes out what comes out. If it's some kind of new field theory that we never met, that's okay. That's exciting.
Just, can you remind me, which element of the algebra is a time translation generator?
So it's P0.
P0.
But there are subtleties here. So there are subtleties because P0 is not exactly clear if it's a time-like generator. So in the Ware black hole metric, P0 is not really, there is no time-like killing vector. All you have is constant T slices that are space-like, so you want to call T, you want to call it, you want to associate the energy to this guy. And also let me...
It generates a time-like asymptotic symmetry, or...?
What do you call time-like symmetry?
Not sure exactly how the work JDS3 actually works.
The thing is, asymptotically, there is no time-like killing vector in these black holes.
I see.
There's an inner region or something like that exposed.
I don't think there is an ergo region. That's really not clear. I don't know if these black holes have any region or not.
So I guess one of the questions I want to ask is, you know, would you, from the GR point of view, is there any reason to expect one of these generators to be positive definite? Is there a positive energy theorem for anybody in this algebra?
So. Actually, what I want to say, I'm gonna go there now. But what I want to say is, actually, you would expect P0 to be actual light-like generator.
Okay.
And if P0 is a light-like generator, then you are happy.
Yeah, that's fine.
So P0, we actually see it as a light-like and continuous generator.
So it's a future directed causal instead.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And the algebra, as far as you know, is consistent with positivity of P naught and unitarity for the.
There are constraints. There are constraints on C and K usually, but I will come there because the thing is that the level that you get from the asymptotic symmetry analysis, so basically there's a minus here that I wanted to avoid to put, so K is negative in the asymptotic symmetry analysis. K is negative. And K negative is basically as bad as having a negative central charge in a usual 2D CFT.
Okay.
But I will comment on this later. Okay. So okay, let's not get started and try to see what we can say, just starting by assuming we have a field theory with these symmetries. And how far can we get? So let me just remind you the Joe's theorem, that if you start with a field theory that is invariant under translations, dilations, and rotations, for free you get a field theory that is invariant in the full conformal group. So if you have a field theory, 2D field theory that's invariant under this. So if you have a field theory that's invariant under this, then automatically the theory is invariant under local rescalings. So obviously we cannot start with a field theory that has this, because there's too much, we get the full conformal group. So our starting point will be resolved by Hoffman and Straminger. That's Polchinski. Hoffman and Straminger. So they studied a different kind of 2D field theory. So they called it a chiral scale invariant field theory. So that's a theory that's invariant under the following transformations. This was A, X minus. So it's invariant under translation, and it's invariant under only chiral rescalings. So in particular, this field theory is not Lorentz invariant. So this is why I want to say that when we call something space-like or time-like or null, it's a bit ambiguous, because the type of a generator can be changed in a theory that is not Lorentz invariant in general. So basically what they did, they just reproduced so they follow the same step as Joe followed for to prove that scale invariance implies conformal invariance in two dimensions. So assuming unitarity, locality, and discrete spectrum for the dilation operator, they show that these global symmetries get extended. So in this case there are three possibilities. So either you get extended to the full conformal group, or you get extended to something that looks like this, which actually corresponds to to Vira 0 plus U1 algebra, or you have a combination of the two. So basically, this symmetry here are exactly the Vira 0 plus U1 hat symmetries that we find from the asymptotic symmetry group analysis. So I will call a filter with these symmetries a warped conformal filter. That's our definition. Okay, good. So now what I want to do is I want to derive. I want to get the equivalent of the Cauchy formula for a symmetry that has these symmetries, for a theory that has these symmetries. So, but first, what I'm going to do is I will first rederive the Cauchy formula in a language that will be that will make it obvious to. I mean, in a language that we can use that we could use later for the case at hand. So recap of Cauchy formula. So let me start with the partition function of a 2D CFT defined on a cylinder. So I put the theory at finite temperature and angular potential. So I'm having this. So this. Beta and L0, so H. Okay. So this is, so now I'm just dealing with the usual 2D CFT case. So because, okay, now my theory is at finite temperature and angular potential, so basically, My correlators in this theory will be periodic. So they will be periodic. They will have two types of periodicities. The first one will be just the spatial periodicities, finding a special cycle, defining the slices on which my states are defined. And I will also have a thermal cycle, which generates this identifications. Right. So there's an I here because I'm just working in Lorentzian signature, doing everything Lorentzian signature. Okay, so that means that if I define light like coordinates x plus minus t, so these periodicities are just okay. So now I know that my theory is invariant under. My theory is invariant under conformal transformations. So in particular, my theory is invariant under the following rescaling. Okay, so what I'm gonna do, and actually the essence of the derivation of the Cauchy formula, is just use the symmetries to swap the cycles, to swap the thermal cycle and the special cycle. Basically, this is my special cycle. And this is my third cycle. So expressing this, so this is the symmetry of the theory. So I'm just going to express these identifications in terms of these new coordinates, and pick lambda plus and lambda minus in such a way that I swap the thermal and special cycles. So basically, this will become x plus prime. So this is my old special cycle, and this will become x plus prime. So bar, this is a bar. Okay, this is my old thermal. Now I'm just going to pick lambda in such a way that this guy becomes 2 pi. Actually minus 2 pi. And that means that this new, the new thermal cycle will be invariant under the identification will read like this, minus 2 pi over tau, minus prime, minus 2 pi over tau bar. And basically this way, this shows, well, this derives the invariance of my partition function under the following transformation. So this is my new thermal cycle. This is just fine. Okay, and I've just rederived for you the invariance of the partition function of the CFT under S modular transformation. Good. So now, okay, let's the next step in the derivation. Okay, so in terms of the original potential temperature and angular potential, this reads pi squared beta. If I just re-express tau, so tau is related to theta and beta by this relation. So I can express this like this. Okay, so this means that is this trace of pi squared. H and is it J. Okay, the next step in the derivation of the Cauchy formula is take some limit that will project the trace on a single state. And I can see here, so theta actually is I beta omega. And I can see that I can achieve this this limit just by taking the large temperature limit. Large T is beta. Is beta going to zero. Okay, and if I do this, so this term is just oscillating, and this term is gonna project the trace on the ground state. So I'll just assume that that my theory has a unique ground state with a minimal value for h. This will project this thing like this, beta h back. Pi squared theta j back. Okay, so from this now it's easy to compute the entropy. So the entropy in a grand canonical ensemble is just given by this. Okay, so I will get something that will depend on beta and theta. I can go to the to micro canonical ensemble, express the potentials beta and theta in terms of h and j or L0 bar. What I'm gonna get then is like this, L0 back, L0 plus 2 pi minus 4 L0 bar back, L0 stuff. Okay, and now in a CFT that's unitary where I have a state operator correspondence, I know that L0, I can compute L0 back on the cylinder from just a mapping from the plane on the cylinder, assuming that all the charges are 0 on the plane. And so L0 back is going to be minus 0.24, and then I'm just getting the usual Cauchy formula. Okay, good. Now let's do the same thing for the warp CFT. So strategy is exactly the same, but we start with different symmetries. We want to see if the symmetries are powerful enough to like do this little game of swapping the cycles.
During the Cauchy formula, modular invariance was supposed to be an additional assumption beyond conformal invariance. Did you sneak that in some place?
Actually, I think that, okay, I was a bit puzzled by that. I have the impression that modular invariance is just the remnant of conformal invariance when you put your theory in the cylinder. So when you put your theory in the cylinder, of course, you are introducing this angular, so you are complexifying one direction. So there are most conformal transformations are broken by this identification of a circle.
Yeah.
So here, actually, I would say that modular invariance, it looks like it's a consequence. I mean, it's just a remnant of your conformal transformations on the plane that you get on the cylinder. No. No, you're asking the question. I mean, could I have a, this sounds like I couldn't have a 2D filter, conformal filter that's not modular invariant.
But there are no examples of such things.
Exactly. So it's true. So where did I sneak this in? Let me think about it, because...
You guys are going to know, the question I want to ask you once you do the derivation of the other guy is, what's the equivalent of modular invariants that you're sneaking in that case?
In the case I'm going to do now.
Yeah. I'll let you do that case first.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it. Okay, good. So I'll just start this. So now let me start with a warped conformal filter, but that I'm going to define on cylinder with coordinates t and phi. And so let me call p0 is the charge associated with dt, l0 the charge associated with phi. Right. So okay, let me p0, l0. Right. So now the symmetries that I have available to play with are different. So I have phi becomes an arbitrary function of phi. T is a function of st plus an arbitrary function of phi. So these are my warped symmetries on a cylinder. Okay, good. So the identification I'm having are as before. Let's do phi and I beta, I plus theta, and I want to use these symmetries again to swap the cycles. So the first symmetry I want to use is this thing. T is t plus minus 2 gamma phi. Right. So if I do this, so this is t prime. Okay, again, I can just express these identifications in terms of t prime and phi prime. So this will be, so t prime, phi prime, so this is t minus 2, gamma phi minus 2, gamma 4 gamma phi, and phi prime is just phi prime plus lambda 2 pi, that's the old special identification, and the old thermal identification, this is T prime. 2 prime, and the old thermal identification now is going to become, so it's T minus 2 gamma, so it's T prime plus I beta minus theta, and the other one is phi prime minus 2 gamma theta. So that's the old thermal cycle. So what I want to do, I want to put this to 0, put this to 2 pi. So this becomes my new special cycle. This is my new thermal cycle. And so basically now my partition function, the invariances I'm getting for my new partition function is, so it's minus 4 pi squared over theta, and I have 2 pi theta over theta. So that's the invariance I'm deriving. Okay, so that's what I'm getting if I just swap the cycles. But here there is a subtlety as compared to the conformal to the usual 2D CFT case, is that the transformation that I've used here that I need to flood the cycles is not a global conformal, is not a global transformation. So this is not part of the SL2R times U1 global symmetries because I have phi here. Right. So basically here I have to take into account the fact that when I do this transformation, I'm picking up an anomaly. And why do M became an anomaly? So the reason why, okay, this thing of swapping cycles is just a way of saying, it's just another way of saying that what I'm actually really doing, let's say I have my torus defining my theory at finite temperature. So usually when you write the partition function, you just define states on the terminal slice and you just evolve them with the evolution operator, which is just this guy, right? So what I'm doing when I swap cycle, I just say, okay, I can slice my path integral in a different way. I can just define my states here and evolve them with this operator. But this operator is just the generator of the special identifications. Okay, so that's I can just see them this way. But then when I want to compare my two partition functions, I mean, these traces, the two partition functions that I write like this, they're traces over different states. So this one is defined on states that are defined on slice, and the other one is just defined as a trace of states that are defined on this slice. So the only thing that this thing is doing is just bringing back these states here, basically. So that means that I have to take into account the transformation of this operator L0 under this transformation. And this is what picks for me an anomaly in this case, because this transformation is anomalous. So basically, here I'll just pick up a term that will look like something like IK D squared. Where k is this term here. Okay. Good. Good, good, good. So, okay, now I'll just follow what we did for the Cardi formula case. I'll just find some regime where I can project my trace and my partition function on some state, on a single state. So basically, z of beta theta is, okay, so that's trace exponential minus beta theta zero. So this is trace of exponential minus, so beta becomes 2 pi beta over theta zero plus I minus over pi squared over theta L zero. So now remember that theta is actually I beta omega. So theta is imaginary. So the limit I'm gonna take here, I'm gonna take the limit where theta is imaginary and small. So to project this trace on the state of minimal L0. So theta goes to 0. And so I'm getting something like this. Theta over theta, P0 back. Minus I 4 pi squared over theta. L0 back.
L0 is the thing which corresponds to rotation generating your space-time?
So that's okay. So that's a good point. And again, the fact it is not clear what is the. Again, I have in mind that L0 is light-like.
Is that true in your context? I mean, if you write expectations around one of your work for these space illusions, does L0 have stuck in the bound below?
Okay, I didn't want to enter into that thing. It is not. It is not. And so that means that this derivation I'm doing here won't apply directly in this case. That's true. But what is true in this case, okay, this is just a field theory derivation, and here I'm just, okay, making the assumption, some assumption on the spectrum of the theory.
So if L0 is bounded below, you can do this.
Right. What happens here, what is bounded below in this case, is this generator. So that thing is bounded below. So basically that means... It is known. So on the gravity solutions, that thing is bounded below, because this is the condition to have a horizon, basically. Otherwise, you have solutions that have naked singularities not hidden by a horizon. So that's just on a gravity observation. It's the same thing as yes, the condition that you have an M and J on a regular black hole to have a horizon, not a naked singularity. So okay, so that means that the revision I'm making here should be amended in some way to really fit that thing. And okay, but I'll come back to this. But that just gonna tell you that the black holes are not gonna be dual to this density matrix. Basically, what they're gonna be dual to is actually they are gonna be dual to something that looks like this. So that's something a little bit strange to do, but I'm just considering another ensemble describing the black holes. And I could basically, I mean, up to certain subtleties, I could redo the whole derivation here, but there are some certain subtleties that why I'm, okay. But it works perfectly. And in this case, the thing that you're gonna project on is a state with minimal thing that has this that has this minimal value, and then it applies straightforwardly to the black holes. But okay. Good. Right, so okay, so now, but let's assume for now that we have a theory where L0 is bounded below. And let's get some formula. Okay, so then we have this, and then now from this I can just, okay, so there is one more information I need. So remember that in the CFT case, we know how to relate the vacuum values of L0 and L0 bar to some quantities of the filter related by to the central charge. So there is an analogous statement one can make here. Actually, one can argue that L0 vac in this theory is related to the central charge that appears in the Virasoro algebra and to the vacuum value of P0. So one way of deriving this is basically is mapping the theory from the plane to the cylinder again. So remember, the way it works in a CFT, you just map the theory from the plane to the cylinder, you know how the stress tensor transforms under this mapping, and it will pick up an anomalous term in the Schwarzschild derivative. You can write the same thing here. These symmetries are generated by a stress tensor T and by a current P. You can write the finite transformations of this guy, and you can now map the theory from the plane to the cylinder, and assuming that the charges are vanishing on the plane, see what happens for the charges on the cylinder, yes. And then you derive a relation like this. Okay, so we have this, and okay, so basically, okay, but before doing this, I can derive the entropy just the way I did before. Beta d beta minus theta minus theta. I don't know, z, I'll get something that is 2 pi over omega p zero vac. Okay, this is what I'm getting. Now I can go from canonical to microcanonical ensemble, trade beta and omega for L0 and P0. I can replace this expression for L0 vac, and then I'll get a formula for Virasoro states, and the thing I'm getting doing so is following. So this is what we get. So first thing is that there is one difference. The first difference with the Cardy formula is that there is one quantity that is not derived, that is not fixed only by the algebra. So the Cardy formula just depends on C, C bar, and the spectrum of L0 and L0 bar. Here we have an additional data, which is the vacuum value of P0. And is not fixed by the symmetries. Okay, of course, there is another thing that might worry you. it's imaginary. Okay. So there are many choices. Either P0 vac can be zero. Okay, if P0 vac is zero, we have something that looks like a chiral CFT with a current, and we are happy, and it's okay, it's cool. what can happen? Of course, if P0 is Hermitian, if it could be Hermitian, there is a problem. If P0 is Hermitian, it has real eigenvalue, and then that thing is complex. So there's manifestly something that's wrong. That means that P0 has to be, for this formula to make sense, P0 has to be non-Hermitian, right? So P0 has to have to allow imaginary eigenvalues. But if it's the case, of course, so P0 really was our DT generator, was our Hamiltonian. So that means that P0 is not Hermitian, so evolution is non-unitary. So if P0 vac is non-zero, the theory that we are describing cannot be unitary. So that means, in particular, that I'm not exactly computing an entropy. I mean, there might be negative norm states, so I'm more computing like an index or something. There might be, I'm summing up stuff, and there might be negative contributions. So, okay, so that's, but that's what this says. Okay, so now I wanna compare this to, the main objective was to compare this to the gravity, on the gravity side. So gravity side. So, for those of you who are familiar with this, I have in mind a particular three-dimensional gravity theory with topologically massive gravity, but the results are pretty robust. They would apply to any three-dimensional theory having warped ADS3 as a solution. So I'm just saying this because warped ADS3 are not Einstein metrics. They don't solve pure GR with negative cosmological constants, so you need to add more matter or curvature terms. Right, so the warped ADS3 black holes, so basically, they have two global charges. So they have P0, which is the mass, and what I call the mass, and L0, which is the angular momentum. Right, so the asymptotic symmetries of these guys are just given by vector fields, which are R, Pn. So, and these guys, of course, form the Virasoro-Posey-1 algebra. And, the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of these black holes is just given by this. Right, so here, so this starts already to look really similar. So this part is exactly the same thing. I just have one thing that I need to fix. I don't know what P0 vac is. Okay. So I need to figure out in the family of black hole metrics, what is P0 vac? What is the metric that I want to call the background? So there is one way. So there is one way these warped black holes can be written. So these warped black holes can actually be written as a deformation of the BTZ black holes. So the BTZ black hole with a mass m BTZ and j BTZ, and I just deformed them by some piece. Some constant here, h squared, so that's a constant. And I add the tensor of two one forms, and these one forms basically are 1 over p0 dt plus d phi. Okay, so this is a vector, this is a killing vector of btz. I'm just taking the dual form, other form btz, and I'm getting the warped black hole metrics. Okay, so now what happens? For h equals 0, for h equals 0, I know what the spectrum of ADS3 gravity is. Something that looks like this. So I have m and j. And here, so these are the BTZ black holes. These are the extremal BTZ black holes. And here I'm having ADS3. For m is minus 1 and j equals 0. Okay, so now what happens for h non-zero? For h non-zero, I'm having all the warped black holes over here. So this is M, B, G, E, and this parameterization. So a further natural question is to ask, okay, what do I have here when MB is minus 1? The metric you're getting when MB is minus 1 and JB is 0. So this metric has two nice properties. The first one So the black holes have only two killing vectors, right? They are just axisymmetric solutions. They have U1 cross U1 as a matrix. When MB is minus 1, the metric I'm getting has global SL2R cross U1 isometry. So this is something I would expect for the background in a theory in a warp conformal field theory. And the second condition is that the metric is free of conical defects. It's smooth. So, okay, and a smooth metric is something that I want to include in my partition function in particular. So these are two good properties. I'm just saying this because, for example, in ADS3, if you go lower and lower here, you also have metrics that have SL2R cross SL2R global isometries for minus 1, minus 4, I think minus 9, and minus n squared. But you won't call these metrics backgrounds because these guys have conical deficits. And this is the same thing. So here, for these values of M and J, I have a metric that has global, enhanced global isometry, and the metric is smooth. Now I can translate these quantities in terms of my original quantities here, P0 and L0. Right. So MB is minus 1 and JB is 0. This translates into, so this is for the vacuum, this translates into P0 vac is I over 6, and L0 vac is whatever it is. Okay, so now I have something that I can try and plug in my formula. Because now I have identified on the field, on the gravity side what I want to call the background. Okay, and of course if I didn't mess up too much. If I put this herein, the result I'm getting is exactly the black hole entropy. Okay. So this is equal to P0 vac. I have a 6, this black hole. Okay, so good, so right, so what is the conclusion of this? So basically, until now, most derivations we have of black hole entropy is only based on the Cardy formula. So we have a black hole, we have an ADS3 factor, we have a 2D conformal field theory. We know how to derive the asymptotic growth of states, and this matches the entropy. So here, we have an example where we didn't need at all the conformal symmetry. We just took what the bulk was telling us. We have a metric that has these symmetries. They are slightly different from a conformal symmetry, but they are powerful enough to derive like a simple formula that gives you the asymptotic growth of states. And these asymptotic growth of states matches the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy of the black holes that are supposed to be dual to thermal states in that theory. Okay, so that's basically it. I have some time to... right, so there's maybe one additional little point I want to make. So originally, these black holes were conjectured to be dual to a 2D CFT because their entropy formula looked like a Cardy formula. So why is it that noise? I mean, this doesn't really look like a Cardy formula. The thing is that you can redefine your charges. For example, if you just redefine new generators that are P0 squared over K and L0 tilde, that is L0 minus P0 squared over K, this formula is going to take exactly the following form. 2 pi minus 4 P0 tilde back P0 tilde 2 pi minus 4 L0 tilde back L0 tilde. No, L0 tilde, so P0 vac, if you define, so P0 vac is going to be something like, so P0 vac is just P0 squared vac over K. If you define this as minus CL over 24, so just some number CL over 24, and L0 vac tilde, this is just going to be fixed, and it's going to be minus R over 24, which is the C that we had in the algebra. Then of course this formula is exactly the Cardy formula, dual form. But I insist on the fact that these symmetries, so the conformal symmetry is never there actually. It's just a way of rewriting things, and that makes you probably think, okay, Yeah, at least it might look like a conformal symmetry, but since you have these squares, it's not realized in a linear way. It might be some kind of non-local rescaling of coordinates, because you can, okay, so I had natural coordinates t and phi associated with L0 and P0. Now you can try to associate coordinates to L0 tilde and P0 tilde, but you will find that it's like multiplying a coordinate by a charge, basically, because you have this square. So it's like you are doing a non-local transformation on these new tilde coordinates. Okay, so I'm going to end up with just one or two conclusions. So the original, of course, the original objective is to understand Kerr CFT, because I mean 3D black holes are nice, but so we take this as a first step to understand the entropy of black holes that don't have a conformal symmetry, but still you can see something about them. So of course, one of the goals is to understand the entropy of higher dimensional black holes that have a warped AdS3 factor in their near horizon geometry. So that's the next step we want to do. And does it work that the warped Cardi formula gives you a sensible result? And we want also, because originally Kerr was conjectured to be dual to a 2D CFT, and there were some evidences, and you might want to say, okay, can I make the difference between a CFT and a warped CFT? What is the right description? Can I make some tests, and it's going to, because here is an example that having the entropy formula might mislead you. I think these techniques of finding asymptotic density of states for algebras that are different from the conformal algebra, they can be applied to other algebra. They can, for example, be applied to asymptotically flat spaces in three dimensions where the symmetry is BMS3. It's slightly different algebra, but you can also apply it and derive some formula. It might be applicable, it might be relevant also for higher spins, because for example the W3 higher spin algebra, I mean it has some, it's a little more complicated, so you have additional, this Wn appearing on the right side, so it's like a nonlinear algebra, but it might be ways to use maybe generalized coordinate transformation that might allow you to derive some formula in this case too. So I think I'm done, so thanks for your question.
CFT and Andy and friends were trying to argue that this was really dual to a CFT. And for that, they imposed some awkward boundary conditions that led to a bunch of conundrums. I mean, it wasn't poorly understood. And you're saying that the same geometry can be understood without imposing those boundary conditions as a what?
Yeah, because basically,
this is much better than.
So basically, the thing is. I have to be careful, because I didn't explain the Kerr entropy here.
Yes.
And the reason why is that when I say that Kerr has a warped AdS3 factor, you have to be, it's not even extremal, it's self-dual. So the thing is that, so self-dual warped AdS3 is to warped AdS3 and warped black holes, what self-dual AdS3 is to the BTC black holes. So self-dual AdS3 spaces, they don't fit in the Brown-Endo boundary conditions. They are different boundary conditions, and they have different symmetries. In particular, so if you take a warped AdS3 space, a global warped AdS3 space, SL2R cross U1 isometry, the boundary conditions that include the black holes, they just extend the SL2R into a Virasoro and the U1 into a U1 hat. But the Kerr CFT and the self-dual warped AdS3, so what Kerr CFT does, they take the U1 and they extend it in the Virasoro algebra.
Yeah, but in order to do that, they have to impose this awkward.
Yeah, exactly. And even in Kerr, you have another set of boundary conditions.
Yeah.
In Kerr, you can impose other boundary conditions that will extend it like this. But right, but Kerr is also Kerr is complicated because the warping factor is not a constant. Also,
correct.
So higher dimensional Kerr is easier. If you take 5D Kerr Newman, you uplift it to six dimensions, and then the near horizon geometry has a warped AdS3 times warped AdS3 factor. So that case might be easier. I don't know if it works for Kerr yet. I don't know if this formula works for Kerr.
Yes. So what you call background?
Yes.
You really want to call something like a zero energy. You want to call it vacuum somehow.
Yes.
Right. So I would expect it to be the zero energy solution. I mean, if you define some energy in this space, this should be the zero energy.
In AdS3, gravity is not. the background is not the vacuum BTZ, is not the vacuum BTZ. You have this mass gap and you have ADS3 that's M as minus one and
yeah, but you can shift.
Yeah, it has to be bounded below, and then you can. So the problem is that in, for example, in Kerr CFT, the central charges would be metric dependent. So the central charge in Kerr CFT is 12J.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to tell what is the background. Is the background J equals zero? Is it?
Isn't that for each J you have a different?
It is like for each J the extremal black hole is the background. So you have non-extremal black holes, but then for each fixed J the background would be the extremal black hole. But yeah.
Other questions?
So from the centralic algebra you have, it seems that you can rescale the K.
Yes.
As whatever you want.
Right.
But from the entropy of the black hole, there's a ratio between P0 and K.
So the thing that is invariant is really P0 squared over K, actually. That's the invariant quantity. And it appears only in this.
In that equation on the top. The entropy of the black hole.
Oh, yeah, no, because this is not correct. This is P0 squared. No, that's not correct either. Sorry, but I'm doing. No, it's correct. Okay, it's correct. Let's see. Yeah, the thing is that really this quantity is really, I mean, secretly is this, basically. So P0 of vac, of course, takes some value on in each specific situation, it takes a value.
But that should change according to the rescaling of P.
Let's see. No, because if you change your coordinates, the vacuum value will change. So this is for one given choice of coordinates. If I had chosen this numerical factor here, might have changed indeed. But the right way of thinking about it is really this formula, and this indeed assumes that I made some choice of coordinates and the algebra is fixed.
Thanks, Stefan, again.